Well, I thought this evening I would speak about Krishna. Nice topic. Krishna. Srinvatasakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Hridyantaksto Yabhadrani Vidhunoti Saritsatam Nashtaprayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Savior. That's the Srimad Bhagavatam. I'm a fan of Srimad Bhagavatam, a little bit maybe addicted to Srimad Bhagavatam, so you'll have to excuse me. I've been speaking recently on third canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, and I'd like to continue that, but I'll go back to the earlier chapters of third canto because there's more stories there. And where there's nice Krishna, it's all Krishna katha, but some it's easier. So there's a particular verse that I'm going to speak from. Canto 3, chapter 3, text number 3. And it's about Krishna. It's Uddhava speaking about Krishna. So maybe there's some new people here. And even if not, you can hear again. Who is Uddhava? In Krishna's pastimes, Uddhava, outside of Vrindavan, Uddhava is the most confidential associate of Krishna. Now one could have a debate, who is the most confidential associate of Krishna? Maybe one could say, Arjuna is, he's the dearmost friend, he spoke Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, therefore Arjuna. But in Brihat Bhagavatamrita, Arjuna says, no. The Yadus, we're always making some plan how to get Krishna to come here to Hastinapur. We have our Pandava conference. And we think, maybe we should have a calamity, and then Krishna will come. Maybe we should have a big festival, and Krishna will come. Maybe this, maybe that, maybe a big war, and Krishna will come. But Krishna stays in Dwarka with the Yadu dynasty. So those who are most intimately connected with Krishna is the Yadus. And amongst the Yadus, they consider that Uddhava is the most intimately connected with Krishna. And Krishna considers that Uddhava is the most confidential because it was before even Dwarka was built. It's always been a holy place, but Krishna built Dwarka. You're going to hear that in a moment. But before it was built, Krishna was in Mathura, and he sent his most confidential associate, guess who? Uddhava, to go to Vrindavan. He had a mission for him, that was the external reason, to deliver a letter from Krishna to the gopis and Srimati Radharani. But the internal reason was he wanted Uddhava to directly first-hand experience the nature of the love of the residents of Vrindavan. Why Krishna is so attracted to the residents of Vrindavan? It's because of their love for him. Krishna is, God is love, they say. God is loving. And his love is for everyone. But naturally, love is such that those who are especially affectionate and especially dependent and especially kind and intimate in their dealings, affection naturally goes to them. So Krishna has special affection for the residents of Vrindavan. And he wanted Uddhava to understand why. So he sent him to Vrindavan. And Uddhava was so amazed at the love of the residents of Vrindavan. There's one literature by our acharyas, not the Bhagavatam, but it describes when he first came to... I don't want to go too far afield, I won't get to what I want to talk about, but when he got to Vrindavan, he wanted to go pay his respects to Nanda and Jasoda, the king of Vrindavan, the king of the cowherds. When he entered the house of Nanda Maharaj, Nanda Maharaj was just staring out the door, looking down the road, waiting for Krishna to come, stunned, speechless. He didn't even acknowledge Uddhava coming into the house. Even like, He just was staring down the road, waiting for Krishna to come. Uddhava was amazed. And then he went inside the house, the palace, and there was Mother Jasoda crying and crying and crying. Her eyes were so filled with tears and blurred, she couldn't even tell who was present. She began speaking to Uddhava, thinking maybe it was Krishna. She was practically mad out of her affection of love for Krishna, feeling intense separation. Uddhava didn't know what to do. He went back out of the house, and there his the royal chariot, the residents of Vrindavan thought, maybe Akura has brought Krishna back. There's a royal chariot. And when Uddhava came out of the house, the palace, they saw him, and he has features that resemble Krishna. His dark complexion, like Krishna. He was dressed somewhat like Krishna, royal attire. They said, no, Krishna's not in royal attire. And that's not Krishna. They were so jubilant to see him and then crushed because it wasn't Krishna. He was riding a wave and got crashed by the wave. He hadn't even met the gopis yet. When he saw the love of the gopis for Krishna, he just prayed that they would place their lotus feet upon his head and give their benediction to him. But then he realized they would be too embarrassed to do that. So instead of asking for some dust from their feet or having them put their feet on his head, let me just do austerities here in Vrindavan and in my next life become a blade of grass or a creeper. So as they're walking, they can step on my head and get some of the dust from their feet so my life can become benedicted. And even if they don't step on me, if they just pass by and some of the dust is raised as they're walking and falls on my head, I would consider that perfection of life. The residents of Vrindavan were so elevated. So later, when Krishna went to Dwarka, Uddhava also went to Dwarka, and he was intimately advising. This is how intimate he was. He was giving Krishna advice. Krishna became bewildered. Krishna is never bewildered. But in Leela, he became bewildered. And he would ask Uddhava's advice. And whatever Uddhava would say, he would accept. Very good advice, Uddhava. Yes, I'll do that. And he just did what Uddhava said. Out of intimacy of love, that was the nature of their relationship. I don't want to go too far. But Krishna, it was time for his pastimes to be ended. So he told Uddhava, I'm going to leave now. And when I leave, Kali Yuga will begin. And when Kali Yuga begins, it gets very bad. And I don't want you to be subjected to all of that. So I want you to go now, before I leave, and take association of the devotees of Nara Narayan, Rishi, and Badrikashram. There you'll be safe. Stay in the association of devotees and you'll be safe. Uddhava didn't want to go. He didn't want to leave Krishna. But he didn't want to disobey Krishna. It's one of those difficult situations. But his mood of service was so strong, he left. At least he started heading towards Badrikashram, but he couldn't continue. He ran back to Dwarka. But by the time he got to Dwarka, Krishna was gone. And he was smashed. So he started looking for Krishna. Looking where, just, hey Radhe, Raja Devi, Ke, Chalalite, just like the Goswamis of Vrindavan, searching, where is Krishna? In the whole of India, where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Finally, one fine day in a forest, he found Krishna. It's a very beautiful description. Krishna was reclining with his back on the lap of a young banyan tree, and his long forearms stretched down to his knees, and his yellow dhoti stretched out before him, and his lotus eyes half closed. Uddhava ran and fell at Krishna's feet and crying, Krishna, I found you. Krishna said, I knew you were coming. And Krishna imparted the Uddhava Gita, which is described in the 11th canto. This is the 3rd canto. And after Krishna completed Uddhava Gita, he gave Uddhava some service so that Uddhava could maintain his life after Krishna left. And the service was, do as I told you, go to the Nara Narayan Rishi. Now that you've heard, I came into this world to give my association to my devotees. And I've done that, with the exception of Nara Narayan Rishi and their devotees. Go there. The things that you've heard from me, you're qualified. You impart to them. And that way, I will be giving my association through you. That's your service. And that service, purposefully, was to sustain his life. Because service sustains our life. Especially when there's a mood of separation, intense as Uddhava had. So Krishna left, and that was in the morning. He left, and Uddhava knew, I'll not see him again. And his heart was filled with pain of separation. He moved from that place because he couldn't stand to stay in that place, and he moved by the bank of the river Jamuna. And there, Vidura came. Uddhava, fancy meeting you here in the forest on the bank of the river Jamuna. What great fortune. And just seeing you, I'm thinking of Krishna. How is Krishna? And Balaram. And in Dwarka, you're a resident of Dwarka. How are Vasudeva and Devaki and Ugrasena and Rohini, and you're the sons of Krishna by mentioning the name, and all the associates of Dwarka. Hearing, he asked a long list of people, and then became silent. And when he became silent, Uddhava was also silent, because his mind had gone so into such a state of absorption and thought of Krishna that he went to Krishna. Consciousness wise, his mind was in Vaikuntha. His body was on the physical plane. It's described in the verse. His body was on the physical plane, but he was with Krishna. But he had been asked this question. He was also, mind you, service-minded. So Uncle Vidura, who he looked upon as his elder and superior, wanted some service. So he wanted to serve. So he tried to leave Vaikuntha to come to this plane and speak about Krishna for Vidura's benefit. His body was showing the symptoms, 8 bodily transformations of ecstasy of love of God. And Vidura was understanding, wow, Uddhava's gone. Uddhava's there. And he's coming back just to serve, to answer my questions. He understood it. Vidura was also highly learned. And what Uddhava's reply spans for about 2.5 chapters. He just pressed Uddhava's Krishna button and he just went on and on and on and on and on and on about Krishna, 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 hey. Verse after verse, very beautiful descriptions of his feelings of love for Krishna. And very much like another one of our great acharyas, Rupa Goswami, who wrote a drama called, well, 2 dramas called Lalita Madhava and Vidagdha Madhava, which are descriptions of Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, Krishna's pastimes outside of Vrindavan. In a dream, Satyabhama, one of the wives of Krishna, appeared in Rupa Goswami's dream and instructed him, write 2 dramas, separate the 2. Lord Chaitanya confirmed the same. Don't write 1 drama, write 2. So he did. And beautiful, beautiful, beautiful descriptions of Krishna's pastimes based upon his realizations within his heart, of the unfolding of Krishna's pastimes within his heart. That was the platform of Rupa Goswami. As he would chant, the pastimes of Krishna were enacted within his heart. It's specifically described like that. And then he wrote what those realizations were, Krishna's pastimes. They're not pastimes that we read about in the Bhagavatam, but they're not imagination. They're pastimes that were enacted in his heart. In Sri Brahma Samhita, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati calls this Sarasakhi, jubilation in the heart. The pastimes of the Supreme Lord appear as the heart becomes 100% attracted and attached. Rati and bhava and asakti, attached to the personality of Godhead. The Lord appears and performs pastimes just from chanting. When or when will that day be ours? Kabe habi bolo se din amar. But that's the fruit of chanting. Okay. Nama in sequence. The name, the form, rupa, the qualities, and the pastimes become revealed in sequence if one becomes one of those very fortunate souls that becomes an offenseless chanter in the holy name. So Uddhava similarly, in his ecstasy of absorption of thought in Krishna, described many, many things of his relationship with Krishna, and then he began describing Krishna's pastimes sequentially. Little cameo images of Krishna's pastimes sequentially, one after the next. First in Vrindavan, and then outside of Vrindavan. So I'm going to read one verse from Krishna's pastimes outside of Vrindavan. It comes right after the verse where Krishna, Uddhava is describing Krishna being reunited with Vasudeva and Devaki, because they, after killing Kamsa, he went to the prison house of Kamsa to see his mother and father along with Balaram. And when they saw Krishna and Balaram, they were stunned. They were thinking, he just killed Kamsa. He who is the terror of the universe, one, and Kamsa was finished. This is not an ordinary child. This is the personality of Godhead. So Krishna was looking, he's just 11 years old, 11 years and 8 months. Looking, little, think of somebody you know that's that old. Looking up at his mother and father, and they're stunned. They're seeing God is standing before us. But Krishna wanted the embrace of his mother and father. You know, this one. When kids do this one, it's, everyone knows what it means. Doesn't matter what culture, language, anything. It's, please pick me up. So Krishna was doing like that. And they were just standing there because they were stunned. So Krishna covered them with his yogamaya potency. They completely forgot that he's God, and they immediately embraced him. Mother Jasoda put Krishna and Balaram on her lap and cried, being reunited. And then the next verse is, Krishna then went to Nanda Maharaj after some days of being in Mathura, and had a conversation with Nanda Maharaj about going back to Vrindavan. It's time to go back to Vrindavan now, Pita. The residents of Vrindavan are very much expecting me to come back. So if you don't come back, they won't be able to sustain their lives. So can you deliver a message and tell them, in just a few days, 3 to 5 days, I will also come. And if you give them that message, they will be able to maintain their lives waiting for me to return. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has an 8-page commentary on that verse where he's going very deeply into the subject of separation in love. Vipralamba bhav, separation of love, and Krishna's intent to maintain the lives of the residents of Vrindavan by his promise, I will come back very soon. And then Krishna decides, along with Vasudeva and Devaki, that he has to go to school now. He's almost 12 years old and hasn't gone to school yet. Yay! Because he's been off with the cows and cowherd boys off in the forest. And so the Vaishya community, the boys didn't need to go to school. They need to learn character, but they didn't need to go to learn higher studies. But now he's in a Kshatriya family, so he needs to go to school. So he selected the best teacher, Sandipani Muni, and he went to the school of Sandipani Muni and made nice friendship with Sudama Brahman. Wonderful story also. So now this is next. text 3. All that was just warm up. Attracted by the beauty and fortune of Rukmini, the daughter of King Bhishmaka, many great princes and kings assembled to marry her. But Lord Krishna stepped over the other hopeful candidates, carried her away as his own share, as Garuda carried away nectar. That's the verse. Purport. Princess Rukmini, the daughter of King Bhishmaka, was actually as attractive as fortune herself, because she was as valuable as gold, both in color and in value, since the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, is the property of the Supreme Lord. Rukmini was actually meant for Lord Krishna, but Shishupal was selected as her bridegroom by Rukmini's elder brother. Although King Bhishmaka wanted his daughter to marry Krishna, Rukmini invited Krishna to take her away from the clutches of Shishupal. So, when the bridegroom Shishupal came there with his party with the desire to marry Rukmini, Krishna all of a sudden swept her from the scene, stepping over the heads of all the princes there, just as Garuda carried away the nectar from the hands of the demons. This incident will be clearly explained in the 10th canto. We're going to clearly explain it from the 10th canto, expanding on the little cameo shot that we just got. This is, Rukmini was the first queen that Krishna married. And the scene comes in the Srimad Bhagavatam just after the 18th battle with Jarasandha in Mathura. Mathura was the capital city, and Krishna was in the capital city along with his father, or the head of the Yadu dynasty. So, Ugrasena. So, Jarasandha, it's a long story. Jarasandha had enmity toward Krishna. He had enmity toward Krishna because Krishna killed Kamsa. And Kamsa had two co-wives who were daughters of Jarasandha. It's a long story how that happened. And the two daughters of Jarasandha went back to their home and cried to their father, "Oh, our husband's been killed by Krishna." So Jarasandha took a vow, "I will destroy, I'll avenge the death of your husband Kamsa. I will kill this cowherd boy who has killed your husband." He took a vow, Kshatriya, blood-curdling, spirited, chivalrous vow. So he amassed a huge army and went charging to Mathura to challenge Krishna. Residents of Mathura were very afraid. Jarasandha is very powerful. He has a whole huge army. Krishna said, "Don't worry, I'll go encounter them myself. I don't need a whole army behind me." Single-handedly, Krishna defeated the entire army except one person. Jarasandha, he left standing on the battlefield alone. And then he told Jarasandha, "You can go home now. I'm not going to waste my time destroying you." Totally humiliated. For it's as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, for one who has once been honored, what does it say? Dishonor is worse than death. So Jarasandha was dishonored, worse than death. And he was going back terribly morose, thinking, better just to give up my life, throw my body into fire or drown in the river or some take poison than live my life being humiliated by Krishna. But his ministers cheered him up and said, fate sometimes moves this way and sometimes it moves that way, and you just, it was one of your bad days. Fate wasn't on your side today. But get another army and go back. You're a great hero. And yeah, I'm a great hero. I'll go get another army. And 17 times. And the 18th time, it appeared that he was victorious because he teamed up with Kalyavana. Kalyavana got cindered by Muchakunda. And then Krishna went up a mountain with Balaram and he set fire. Jarasandha set fire on the mountain and thought Krishna's dead. So he celebrated. 18th time, finally. So then Krishna went with Balaram to Dwarka. That's just immediately preceding the marriage of Rukmini. So meanwhile, Jarasandha had another friend, another asura friend like him, and that was Shishupal. And Shishupal happened to also be a friend of Rukmi. Rukmi was the elder brother of Rukmini. And both were the son and the daughter of King Bhishmaka. And King Bhishmaka, he wanted very much for his daughter to marry Krishna. And the whole family, the royal family, everyone except one, wanted Rukmini to marry Krishna. Except Rukmi. Rukmi just had, like Shishupal, he had such bad attitude toward Krishna. He just despised Krishna. Not even as much as Shishupal, but very much. Shishupal was special. We'll get to Shishupal in a moment. So Rukmini, like us, like most of us, maybe there's someone here who has seen Krishna, but she hadn't seen Krishna. She just heard about Krishna. Anyone here in that category? We've heard about Krishna, but we haven't seen Krishna. But unlike us, Rukmini completely gave her heart to Krishna. So when it was time for her marriage, young girl, in her maturing stage, the daughter of the king wanted her to marry Krishna. She wanted to marry Krishna, but Rukmini was very strong. And he made another arrangement. Shishupal was notified. My daughter is soon to be married. It's her age to be married. You come. I'll personally make all the arrangements for the wedding. So, Shishupal. Especially getting one up on Krishna, because Shishupal really didn't like Krishna. I'll tell the story. It's in one of our writings of our acharyas that when Shishupal was born, Shishupal was related, not in the same family as Krishna, but a relative of Krishna, part of the royal family. When Shishupal was born, someone, in the course of speaking about Shishupal, also mentioned Krishna, because he's part of the same family. And when Shishupal heard the name Krishna, he started screaming. You know, sometimes children cry, and sometimes they scream. I'm sure you all know about that one. So he started screaming. Everyone came to see what was wrong, and he screamed and screamed nonstop for hours. And it went all day long and all night long, and the next day and the next day. It went on for a whole month, screaming. Nobody knew why, and the reason was he just heard Krishna's name. He had an attitude towards Krishna that even was more than Rukmini. But that was their, you know, birds of a feather flock together. They were like one another. Rukmini didn't like Krishna. Doesn't say why, just in his blood. So Shishupal came. Jarasandha came. This is just after his defeating Krishna for the 18th time, after the 17 losses. And all the royal families in the whole countryside were invited to come for the wedding of Shishupal and Rukmini. So Rukmini didn't want at all to marry Shishupal. So she wrote a letter, a love letter. Very intriguing. She wrote a letter to Krishna and had a brahmana, trusted brahmana, take the letter to Krishna. And the brahmana delivered the letter to Krishna in Dwarka. That's not Krishna. Remember, he just returned. No. He was in Mathura for some time. But he's still young, but also marriageable. And Rukmini is also young, but marriageable. So I'm going to read Rukmini's letter to dear Krishna. Not too long. Oh, beauty of the worlds! Having heard of your qualities which enter the ears of those who hear and remove their bodily distress, and having also heard of your beauty, which fulfills all the visual desires of those who see, I have fixed my shameless mind upon you, O Krishna. She's pretty blunt. She doesn't have time to waste. The marriage is about to happen. O Mukunda, you are equal only to yourself in lineage, character, beauty, knowledge, youthfulness, wealth, and influence. O lion among men, you delight the minds of all mankind. What aristocratic, sober-minded, and marriageable girl of a good family would not choose you as her husband when the proper time has come? Therefore, my dear Lord, I have chosen you as my husband, and I surrender myself to you. Please, come swiftly, O Almighty One, and make me your wife, dear lotus-eyed Lord. Let Shishupal never touch the hero's portion like a jackal stealing the property of a lion. If I have sufficiently worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead by pious works, sacrifices, charity, rituals, and vows, and also by worshipping the demigods, brahmanas, and gurus, then may Gadagraja come and take my hand, and not Dhammaghosha's son or anyone else. O unconquerable one, tomorrow, when my marriage ceremony is about to begin, you should arrive unseen in Vidarbha and surround yourself with the leaders of your army. Then crush the forces of Chaidya and Magadhendra, that's Jarasandha, and marry me in the Rakshasa style, winning me with your valor. The Rakshasa style means kidnapping, like is about to happen. Since I will be staying in the inner chambers of the palace, you may wonder, how can I carry you away without killing some of your relatives? But I shall tell you a way. On the day, she's Kshatriya stock. She's smart. She knows how to plan things. On the day before the marriage, there's a grand procession to honor the royal family's deity. And in this procession, the new bride goes outside the city to visit the goddess Girija. O lotus-eyed one, great souls like Lord Shiva hanker to bathe in the dust of your lotus feet and thereby destroy their ignorance. If I cannot obtain your mercy, I shall simply give up my vital force. which will have become weak from the severe penances I will perform. Then, after hundreds of lifetimes of endeavor, I may obtain your mercy." The Brahmana said, "This is the confidential message I have brought with me, O Lord of the Yadus. Please consider what must be done in these circumstances and do it at once." Krishna smiled. He accepted her submission, made a plan that the Yadu army, not in disguise, but came knowingly to the outskirts of King Bhishmaka's palace in capital city. King Bhishmaka was very happy. He thought that Krishna had come to attend the wedding in honor of King Bhishmaka and his royal family. But he spoke words, he went personally to receive Krishna and said bluntly, "You should marry Rukmini, not Shishupal. If the Supreme Lord intervenes and this desire of mine could be manifest, this will be very nice." Krishna just smiled. So, the grand procession, because she was very protected, the kings had also not seen her. She lived inside the royal palace. But when she came out of the palace in royal procession, they were stunned. She's the goddess of fortune. As Lakshmi is to Narayan, Rukmini is to Krishna. So I'm going to skip reading. The grand procession is amazing. Hundreds and thousands of different persons, royal personality of different job descriptions, services, accompanied her. She went before the goddess and prayed to the goddess, "Please let Krishna be my husband." Then she left the goddess's Ambika, is the goddess, the wife of Lord Shiva. And she then left. As she left, there's a description of her beauty, which I'm not going to read, but I'll read what happened. "Seeing her, the assembled heroes were totally bewildered. Lust tore at their hearts. Indeed, when the kings saw her broad smile and shy glance, they became stupefied, dropped their weapons, and fell unconscious to the ground from their elephants, chariots, and horses. On the pretext of the procession, Rukmini displayed her beauty for Krishna alone. Slowly, she advanced the two moving lotus whorls of her feet, awaiting for the arrival of the Supreme Lord. With the fingernails of her left hand, she pushed some strands of hair away from her face and shyly looked from the corners of her eyes at the kings standing before her. At that moment she saw Krishna. Then, while his enemies looked on, the Lord seized the princess, who was eager to mount his chariot, and off they went." Yahoo. And Krishna brandished his sword and his weapons in the chariot, and there's Rukmini riding in the back of the chariot, and Krishna's driving the chariot, and the other kings enraged. Jarasandha leading the group, "We can't allow this. Is a disgrace, a great dishonor. Get on your chariots and pursue and destroy this foolish person." And the armies were chasing behind, and Krishna was moving ahead, and one hand on the reins and the other hand ready to do battle. Rukmini became very fearful seeing this confrontation. Krishna reassured her, "Don't worry, Rukmini. Our soldiers will defeat the other armies very quickly." So Krishna had his whole army with him. and the army of Krishna smashed to pieces the armies that were pursuing him, the kings and the princes and all the chivalrous personalities. And even Jarasandha and even Shishupal gave up. They saw everyone was running the other direction. And Shishupal was now very discouraged. I've been totally humiliated by Krishna. And Jarasandha cheered him up, said, "It happened 17 times to me. This is just once for you." But the 18th time I got him. At least he ran. And, you know, a learned person doesn't lament for victory or defeat or honor or dishonor. He spoke transcendental knowledge, and be patient, you'll get another chance. Later, fate will go your way. Same way he was encouraged by his ministers. But Shishupal didn't forget. Oh, some other things happened. Rukmi got his army together. His army was defeated. Krishna was ready to kill Rukmi, and Rukmini pleaded for his life. So Krishna spared his life and just cut off all his head hair, except little patches here and there. Part of his mustache, and left the other part of his mustache, and ready to send him on his way. And Balaram came, and he scolded Krishna. This isn't good. And he scolded Rukmini. You're weak-hearted. He's your brother. You should honor him. And Krishna went back to Dwarka, and that was his first queen, Rukmini. They were married in grand style. But Shishupal didn't forget. I'll try to do this quickly. But Shishupal, as I mentioned, from the day that he was born, it was just in his genes. He is like anti-Krishna genes. Do some special study on his gene pool. And this event, he just drove him mad. And so when the coronation of, or the Rajasuya Yajna of Yudhisthira was to be performed, and part of such a ceremony is that the guest of honor, the greatest person in the assembly, is honored, Bhishma Dev stood and said he wanted to speak about Krishna as the best in the whole assembly. And he spoke very beautifully about Krishna's greatness. But Shishupal was in the assembly because he was part of the same royal family. He couldn't bear hearing glorification of Krishna. So he just stood up in the midst of the whole assembly and began blaspheming Krishna. Blasting him. Bhima was in the assembly. And he reached for his club. And Krishna just didn't say a word. He just raised his hand like that. No. Bhima was seething. And after 100 blasphemies of Krishna, Sudarshan's chakra separated the speaking part of Shishupal's body from the rest of his body. And they cleaned up the mess and then went on with the ceremony. At the end of the ceremony, Yudhisthira asked a question. This is maybe the punchline of the whole message this evening. Yudhisthira asked Narada Muni, "How did that happen? We all saw in the midst of the assembly that the soul, when Shishupal was killed, his soul went up in the air, hovered for some moments like a blazing sun, and then entered into the body of Krishna. He achieved liberation. And Shishupal was so bad. But there are great personalities, yogis and tapasvis and sages and Lifetimes they spend trying to get Sayujamukti and they don't get Sayujamukti. And here's this bad person. And we saw it. He got liberation. How is this possible? Good question, huh? Narada Muni's answer was, just see the power of the holy name. Even if calling the holy name in scorn or derision, as did Shishupal, he became liberated. The power of the holy name is so great. What to speak of if you chant or call the holy name with love and devotion? How powerful. Everyone should not be Shishupals, but in any case, chant the holy name. Chant the holy name very carefully, attentively, with devotion, with as much attention as you can manage. And the effect is very great. All the impurities that are caked upon our heart, the power of the holy name is so great. They're all, relatively speaking, easily and quickly removed. Even we have a tendency, so we have certain favorite ones of our impurities, and we hold on to them. And Krishna takes them away too. And we go, ouch. And Krishna takes them away too. So the Bhagavatam is teaching us, just now back to the Srinvata Svakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Hridyantakso Yabhadrani Vidhunoti Suritsatam. The heart becomes cleansed by just hearing Krishna Katha, whether it's chanting your japa and hearing Krishna's name, taking part in the kirtan, hearing and chanting Krishna's name, hearing the wonderful topics of Krishna, his qualities, his pastimes, his loving dealings. It's all in the same category of Krishna Katha, and it's all abhadras or inauspicious things become very quickly cleansed from the heart. So that's why we have temples. So we can come together and hear about Krishna together and cleanse our hearts together and engage in the worship of the deity form of the Lord as soon as I finish speaking. So thank you all for joining. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki.
This is Prabhupada.